Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Now, if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll know that I am championing Keenan Chaney's memoir, A Light That Never Goes Out, for the RT Radio 1 Listener's Choice category at the Irish Book Awards. The book was published last month, 7 months after the broadcaster's premature death, and it has proved to be a bestseller. And I'm delighted to welcome Keenan's husband, Conor Ferguson, to the studio to talk about it this morning. Morning, Conor.
Good morning, Miriam.
Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Listen, of course, Keenan sadly died in February of this year, but her light has not gone out. It lives on, of course, in you and your beautiful children, Ben and Lucy, in this memoir. How are you all doing?
We're doing pretty good, I think. You know, I mean, today's an anniversary, but yesterday, you know, after doing all the sort of run around the car, picking up things, doing the shopping and all, we got back to the house and I was reviewing the news on Twitter of that Biden had got in, and you know, it was actually quite an emotional moment for me because, you know, I think I'd probably wrapped up a lot of my anger in the tangerine twerp in the White House, you know, for the past couple of years. I think he was the thing that I was annoyed at more than anything else. So to hear Joe Biden winning the election was a big moment. And then I looked out the window and Lucy and Ben were out on the steps hanging out Christmas lights, because that's just their way. You know, they just want Christmas to come. It felt to me like Christmas had come early. And I don't know if they were reacting to the news, but they just felt like, hey, let's hang out some Christmas lights. And it was beautiful.
Keelan would have been so happy to see that.
She would have, yeah. She would have been really moved by that, yeah. And she would have, she's the cause of it, you know. It's that bit of her and them that made them do it.
Staying busy as well, has that helped you? I mean, she used to make me laugh in the corridors because she was saying, first she got you to drive and then, like, you're now doing loads of jobs that she would have done, aren't you?
Yeah, I now have a long task list that generally in the past I could have relied on Keelan to fulfil. We moved into a wreck of a house and did all that up, but there's ongoing work that needs to be done, and Lucy and Ben are kind of marshalling me along to, Daddy, when's the guy coming to paint the kitchen cupboards? And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that still needs doing, so I'm kind of getting that done and doing the taxi service that most parents have to do for their children. Keelan used to be the one driver, and I'd go along kind of riding shotgun, but it was never for me to jump in the car. But I'm doing that now, so it's great to be able to drive.
It's interesting, you know, what people do. Do you keep a lot of photographs of Keelan, you know, with children? Do you keep her ever present, or do you try, you know, to let your children get on living? How do you balance that? It's a real tough one.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to plug the book here, but we've been granted this gift of a book. So, you know, because I suppose I was thinking, oh, I should put up loads of photos around the place and let's be talking about it all the time. But actually, all of that has gone into the book, you know, and I think, like, they've actually both read the book. I mean, I was really surprised that they're listening now. They've probably been given out. But, you know, they both read the book. They're happy to kind of engage with the story. And we're very lucky to have that, sort of have it encapsulated, because it means that we can kind of do our best to get on with normal life.
And has lockdown helped you? In other words, help the three of you in a weird way.
I think it has. I think, you know, in the last 6 months, I suppose, of Keelan's life, we had constant visitors to our door, and that was great, and it's necessary, and it was wonderful, and constant deliveries of lasagna and, you know, rice dishes and all sorts of food. So people just calling by all the time, and I guess it was kind of, it was nice to be able to have our own little private world back and be able to sort of absorb the shock of what had happened over the past few months. So I think lockdown was probably better for us than it was for most people. But equally, it was so amazing in summer when we got a chance to break out and we went to the West, you know, when they loosened the restrictions. Mm-hmm. And we had a lovely time there. So, you know, Keelan left me firm instructions that we were to just keep on living and keep on doing stuff and entertaining ourselves. and not to sort of curl up in a ball. So we've been doing that, and that's been going okay.
I mean, and for any of us who are privileged enough to know Keelan from working with her, she was an extraordinary person in so many ways, not just being a brilliant broadcaster, but in the courage in which she faced her illness. But for the people listening who might know her as well, only know her from TV and radio, tell us the kind of person Keelan was, what she was like.
Well, she was funny, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what, you know, we met as teenagers, and you know, she really, she stood out then, you know, because she was funny and she's very kind of sardonic, and she took a wry view on things. And I suppose in her job, she had to sort of be nice to everyone and be open to everyone. And she wasn't a terribly judgmental person, but I suppose she could be quite caustic about people who had who gave themselves a great welcome, she'd say. You know, she would, she wouldn't feel she had to take on somebody for being pompous or full of their own importance, but she was certainly aware of it. It was something that she found, you know, she'd always say, God, he thinks it's all about him. It wasn't always a man, but often he's just, everything is all about him. So she's kind of funny like that, and she was fun, and she was really enthusiastic, and she liked a good dance, you know.
She was a great dancer, actually.
Well, I suppose, you know, you can't really tell, you're standing that close to somebody, but but generally she dragged me up through the dancing, but once I got going, the two of us would tend to last it out for a while.
And on the memoir, the title, you know, it's not a surprise that she chose a Smith's lyric for it, is it?
Well, now she didn't technically choose the title, and she was a little bit queasy about it as well, because, you know, I think it's not how she would describe herself, but it was one of the titles that we had discussed, and she did. I mean, she liked the Smiths. She did love the Smiths, but she did have to be reminded when I wrote that line on an anniversary card, and she said, "Oh, that's beautiful, you know, thanks." And I said, "But like, that's Morrissey, you know. I didn't say that. That was Morrissey said that." She said, "Oh yeah, okay. Well, it's still nice." So sometimes it's just choosing the line. You don't have to come up with it yourself. But she did. I mean, latterly, you know, the Smiths were a band for being in your youth. And I'm not sure Keelan necessarily found Morrissey yodeling in his 50s as relevant as she did in her teens. And we often fought over music, in that I wanted to play music and she kind of would prefer to listen to the radio, listen to people talking. Mm. And now I've kind of got addicted to people talking instead of music.
And the nice thing is, you delivered a eulogy at Keelan's funeral, which to me is the best eulogy I've ever heard, because it mixed both love, emotion, but it was also incredibly funny. There's a great story in the memoir about the opportunity you had to DJ at a party for Madonna in Italy, but Keelan left before the Queen of Pop herself arrived.
Yeah, it was typical of Keelan. She never liked being the DJ's moll anyway. Like, anytime I was DJing, she'd never come up with a drink or say, "Are you all right?" or anything. She'd just kind of leave me to it, because she thought that was a bit embarrassing to be kind of the hanger-on of the DJ. So even when it came to DJing this party for Madonna, you brought it up.
Absolutely. It's a great story. Go on.
She didn't come along. Now, she was 7 months pregnant at the time, so I guess there wasn't much party spirit in her, but I thought, you surely want to come along and see who's there. But she didn't go. She was just kind of, she was quite shy underneath it all, you know, and she wasn't a natural mingler. But she could turn it on, you know, she really could turn on, and she knew how to talk to people and how to listen to people above all. But she probably didn't really want to be listening to a bunch of Italians like prattling on about what they were wearing. So then afterwards, you know, a few weeks later in the post, this handbag arrives from Sylvia Fendi, who had hosted the party for Madonna. She was the head of the Fendi fashion label, saying, "We're really sorry we didn't make you feel welcome to come to our party, so we have a handbag." So Keelan was kind of delighted with that bit anyway.
That was great. And I mean, you just said there, like, she didn't have much time for people who had a great welcome for themselves, because she was the opposite of that. I always found, like, I know from her work in primetime, she had this extraordinary body of work where she went out and allowed people who don't normally get to tell their stories to tell them. And I think that's what's wonderful about this memoir. Like, in a way, it was surprising someone like Keelan would do a memoir, because she was never about her, but enabled her, I think Niamh O'Connor helped you do this, to tell the great stories she told through her journalism.
Well, yeah. I mean, she was quite sort of nervous about who's going to read a book about me, and like seriously. But Niamh O'Connor of this parish, she said, "Keelan, you've got so many great stories about the work you've done. Mm. You know, and Keelan's like, yeah, well, I'm interested in doing a book about the work. I don't want to do a book about myself, but I want to talk about the work. But in doing so, I mean, she did open herself up to kind of reflecting on her predicament and, you know, talking about the treatment she was undergoing at the time throughout, I suppose, her last year. And it was a great way for her to sort of face all that, mm-hmm. and to reflect on her life and reflect on some of the funny stories as much as the serious kind of journalism. And generally, when she's looking back at her documentary, she's going, God, I was sort of in some pretty dodgy situations there, and I didn't realise it at the time, because you come home like at 2 a.m. on a Friday night and say, oh, it's just... met these lads out in Cabra, and they both had guns, and I think they might be hitmen. Anyway, we did an interview, and you know, to her that was just sort of a funny side of the job. But then when she's looking back, she's going, God, that was pretty shaky stuff I was getting up to.
And brilliant journalism, which I think is so wonderful, it came through in the memoir. And of course, everyone talks about it, but when her cancer returned for the second time, it also seems to have motivated her to do so many other things. I mean, she always seemed to be the type of person, she could turn a negative into a positive.
Yeah, she could. I mean, she's a naturally positive person, and she kind of worked on that in herself as well, because we all drift into negative thoughts, and she just didn't tolerate that so much. Again, that was sort of a gift to us, I suppose, that throughout her illness, she didn't make it about her illness or about her. She kind of made it... She talks a lot about the treatment and about the process of what she was going through. Mm-hmm. And she talked about the people she met along the way. She didn't talk about her own plight, I suppose. She didn't really look at it that way. She didn't want to look at it that way. And she didn't allow herself to look at it that way. And, you know, like that's not easy. It's not just that you have a natural skill set to do that. She kind of worked on, I'm going to be positive about this, and I'm going to try and be helpful. Probably as much for herself as for us, but we certainly benefited from it, me and the kids.
And was she ever angry? I mean, I'm conscious my own mum will be listening now. My sister died when she was 33 of cancer, leaving two little girls. And my mum is still, you know, angry that her daughter was robbed of her life. Were you angry that Keelan, because in a sense, she was robbed of her life.
She was. And I suppose Keelan has always been a big influence on me. I've always kind of let her lead. And that's how, you know, the message she led with was there's no point wasting time on being angry. And as I said, I probably spent all my anger on tweeting Donald Trump, you know, and getting it out that way. Because you get lost in that negativity if you let yourself...
Yeah, absolutely. And back in the memoir, actually, she writes herself, and I think it's fascinating, about your concept of an all is lost moment. Explain that to our listeners.
Yes, well, I read this in some film book, the book on script writing and screenwriting, which kind of says, you know, that there's kind of a formula for most films, and not just the blockbusters, but even like the dramas, that sort of they hit certain marks along the way in telling the story and keeping the viewer engaged. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it comes from Aristotle in the beginning, but we won't go that far back. But one of the things was, and you will notice it in films, is that there is a point where you just think, oh my God, they're totally fecked now. There's no way they're going to get out of this situation. Whether it's a couple are on the brink of divorce or people hanging off a cable, you know, dangling off a crane, you think this is, they're finished. All is lost. It's all gone astray here. But then something will happen. Superman will come along, or the wife will get pregnant and go, let's not get a divorce. Let's get married again. Something will happen and they will be brought back from the brink. So that's the all is lost moments. And I talked to Keelan about that, and she loved that idea that, you know, when you think it's all over, you just have to hope that there's going to be another bit.
It's absolutely lovely. Lots of people texting and writing in, Connor. There's your Twitter handle, which is The Only Mr. Soft, Connor Ferguson, on with Miriam talking about Lovey Keenan. There is A Light is an Extraordinary Book. Another person says, morning, Miriam, please let Connor know I read the book. It was fabulous. Her family should be so proud of her. It will be a great comfort to them in time to come. May she rest in peace. That's from Mary Murphy. And one more, Brian in Dublin says, reading Keenan's book at the moment, and it's simple, accessible, affecting and very moving. Great book. Before I let you go and mention the book again, how are you yourself?
I mean, the book has sort of carried me through the last 8 months. So I don't know how I am. I'll tell you after Christmas. I feel okay. You know, it's very uplifting to hear stuff like that. And I keep hearing that from people. People are really responding really well to it. And so I feel really proud of Keelan, you know, getting the book, because it was a big job for her to get that finished in a matter of months, you know. And, you know, I'm proud of myself, I suppose, for helping to get it over the line. So I'm just still floating on a little bit of a cloud there, I suppose, with
it. Yeah, which is wonderful. And you finished it beautifully. Well, look, as I said, we're championing this book, A Light That Never Goes Out, a memoir by Keelan Chaney. It's published by Gill Books. And I'd like all my listeners, please, to vote for it now in the On Post Irish Book Awards. All you got to do is to go online to rt.ie/culture to make sure Keelan's book wins. Connor, as ever, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Miriam.
Mind yourself.